Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Divrei Yomim Beis Perek Chof Aleph, the 21st chapter of the second book of Divrei Yomim. The topic of our Perek is Yehoram, the son of Yehoshaphat in the south, and it is 20 psukim long. The parallel parasha is to be found in Melachim Beis Perek Ches. Notice that we're skipping over the story of the kings in the north, after Achav primarily, and we're skipping straight to the kings in the south because that's the focus of Divrei Hayamim. And in this section, we're filling in some of the stories which are not there in Melachim Beis. We focus on the first three psukim about the death of Yehoshaphat, and in this we're told that when Yehoshaphat passed away, he was very much a righteous king for the most part. As we saw, we see that his son Yehoram takes his place. However, he had many other brothers. He had Azariah, Yechiel, Zechariahu, Azariahu, Michael, Shvatayahu. So he had all these brothers, and what happened was is that Yehoshaphat gave them all matanos rabbis. He gave them many different gifts: gold, silver, migdanos, fortified cities in Yehuda, because he wanted Yehoram to take the throne. Yehoram was the Bechor. Now, Abarbanel actually goes on to explain this. Abarbanel is to be found in Melachim, at the beginning of Melachim Beis, in Perek Aleph, where he explains that, in fact, the fact that the Pasuk emphasizes that he's giving the kingship to Yehoram because he is the Bechor seems a little out of place. After all, that is the natural direction of kingship. Of inheritance of kingship goes to the firstborn. The fact that Tanakh is emphasizing that here indicates there was contention between the brothers, which is why, in fact, the Abarbanel, as all the Mephoreshim tried to do in squaring the timeline, which is a very complex timeline to understand over here. We're not going to spend too much time on it right now, but the understanding is that Yehoshaphat saw the tension between the brothers, and for the last 7 years of his reign, essentially made Yehoram the king in his lifetime, in the presence of the brothers. And that's why he spent the time essentially giving gifts to the other brothers to make them happy and content with their lot not being the king, even though they were vying for it. They felt that Yehoram was not the right candidate for it. Turns out, unfortunately, we read Psukim Dalad to Zion that it doesn't end well. We hear, in fact, in the next section, that once Yehoram becomes king, he murders all of his brothers. So, and he also kills a number of Sarei Yisrael, of officers in Israel. We're told that he's 32 years old when he assumes kingship and rules for 8 years, dying at 40 years old, obviously very young. We'll see in just a moment how and why that happens. The Abarbanel points out that he assumed kingship at the age of 25 to 32 was in the time of Yehoshaphat, and now from 32 to 40 was on his own. And we're told that he goes in the ways of the kings of Israel. It means the kings in the north. Like Achav. Why? One of the reasons is because he married the daughter of Achav. And so there's a continual family connection over here, which ultimately sways him in a negative direction. We'll see who she is and what the relevance of her later on. But Hashem did not want to fully destroy him because he had promised that the David HaMelech would have continuity and that there would be a destiny to his generations. So David HaMelech preserved him to a certain degree. Hashem preserved this Yehoram because of that promise to David. Why did he kill his brothers? The Malbim explains that after his father passed away, he was still insecure in the situation because he knew his brothers had good claims to the throne, and so that's why he murdered them in order to get there. So it seems a very dirty and very complex business, which now leads to the geopolitical situation in the surrounding area. We hear from Sukkim Ches to Yud Aleph about a couple rebellions. So we hear about Posha Edom. Edom, which is the southeast kingdom to the land of Israel, now also rebels against them, and they place a king. They coronate a king over them. And then we have a very confusing pasuk where we hear about how Yehoram brings all his officers and his chariots and attacks at night all those Edomites who are surrounding him. But Edom still rebels against him, and we hear about Livna also rebelling against him, and the pasuk attributes this to Biki Azav Hashem Es Hashem Elokei Avosav, because he abandoned Hashem. He allowed the Bamois, the personal altars, to return to the heels of Yehuda, and ultimately he brought Yehuda away from service of Hashem. So what is the significance in this section of Edom placing a king over them? So Rashi points out that up till now, from the times of David, David HaMelech had killed their officers, their kings, and their soldier age men, and had appointees, Israel had appointees in this vassal state of Edom. The sign of them placing a king on them means to say this is a move towards independence, independence financially, independence militarily from Israel. That's what's happening right now. As a function of his negative internal policies leads to, unfortunately, negative external policies, foreign policies as well. It's very curious who won the war, because it sounds like in Pasuk Tes that Yehoram manages to smite them. He manages to beat them down, but then it repeats that Edom actually rebels against them. So what's really going on here? So the Malbim is safe in Melachim. The parallel section in Melachim Beis Perek Ches explains that what happened was that the host or the armies of Edom had come out now to fight against Yehoram. Yehoram came out to meet them, but attacked early. Rather than waiting for the next day to attack their camp, attacked at night, managing to essentially kill those immediately around him, and then fled. Which meant to say this was not a sign of strength, this was a sign of weakness, that he was not able to do this, as the Radak explains as well. So this attack essentially allowed him to escape rather than allowing him to achieve a power, ascendancy and power, and that's why the Pasuk emphasizes that Edom was able to rebel, because they now were no longer under the thumb of Israel. This proved the weakness of Israel. Where is this area of Livna, which also seems to rebel against them? So the Mefarshim struggle as to where Livna is. It seems to be in the south area of Israel. But Rashi points out that in Sefer Melachim, that this really actually belongs to the kingdom of Yehuda, of Israel. So that means to say that what might be being described over here is the rebellion of actual Jews or Israelites against their own overlord, their own king. That's and they were neighbors to Edom, seeing that the Edomites could actually now have their own independence. They, or this small section, also threw off the yoke of the king, which is a terrifying idea, that this idea of independence even spilled forth into Israel itself. At which point in Psukim Yud Beis to Tezvav, we hear a very strange thing happens. And that is, suddenly a michtav me Eliyahu, a letter from Eliyahu arrives, and in it it says, this is written to Yehoram, he says to Yehoram, you did not walk in the ways of your father Yehoshaphat, or the ways of Asa, who are two righteous kings, rather you went in the ways of the kings of Israel, and you led astray your nation, like Ahab led astray his nation, and you killed your brothers who are better than you. Because of that, Hashem is bringing a plague upon you and your nation, your sons, your daughters, and all your properties. And you are going to, he says to Yehoram, have a terrible sickness in your intestine, and it's going to come at a particular time. Yamim al Yamim. So one quick second over here. Isn't Eliyahu gone already? The Radak points out, of course he's gone. Eliyahu ascended to heaven in the times of Yehoshaphat. That means to say Eliyahu was no longer around, not acting as a prophet now. He was gone, which means to say he is not here. So how does this letter appear? The Abarbanel says, we see incontrovertibly from Tanakh that Eliyahu is immortal. Eliyahu is not, this is not that Eliyahu died, Eliyahu continues to live. This is the notion that he believes that it's that Eliyahu is Pinchas, because it means literally he is not subject to mortality. The Chida points out that the way it worked out was that he appeared and gave his words to a living prophet who used those words to write down and give it to Yehoram. Why is he doing it this way? Why is it necessary for Eliyahu to extend himself? So Radak says to scare Yehoram. He's now getting a supernatural message from somebody who's no longer living, it seems. So that would scare Yehoram terribly. The Malbim says no, it's because it's part of Eliyahu's mission. Eliyahu's mission was to bring justice to the house of Ahav. Well, now Yehoram is married to the daughter of Ahav, he's the son-in-law of Ahav, so that's part of the jurisdiction of Eliyahu, which continues even beyond his ascension to heaven. Finally, we hear about the prophecy or the Michtav Me'eliyahu coming into reality in the last psukim of the parak, to Zion, to Chof, where we hear about the idea that there's now a rebellion in the south of the Philistines and the Arabs now fight against Yehoram, and they fight successfully. They break through Yehuda. They take all the possessions. They take his sons and his daughters and his wife, and they only leave one child alive, and that's Yehoiachaz, who is the youngest son of Yehoram. And at this point in time, he also becomes terribly sick in his intestines. And at a certain point, liyamim, miyamim, at that time, at the end of this 2-year period of terrible sickness, he dies, and essentially all his intestines come out. They don't burn his possessions like they usually burn the king's possessions. And again, we are told that he reigns for 8 years, essentially, and he's not buried in the area of kings. So why is it that they leave over his youngest son and don't kill the whole family? So Ralbag says it's from Hashem, it's midah keneged midah. Essentially, Yehoram was the one who killed all of the children of his father, except for one, except for himself, and that's what's happening to him. All his children, except for one, are being killed. That's what Ralbag explains. The idea of the sreif, of the burning, is a notion that kings usually have burning done, that all their possessions are burnt, that nobody else should use them. The fact that they're not burnt, the fact that he's not buried in this area of his parents in the monarch burial section, is a sign of a diminution of kavod, of lack of honor to him because of the life that he led. And this closes this very sad chapter on the life of Yehoram, the son of Yehoshaphat. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.